Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Unique Life Starring You. This show airs every Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for more information about the show, please visit artistfirst.com/unique.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. And now here is your host of Unique, Miss Susan Stackpole.
Thank you so much, Corey, and thank you, listeners, for joining us here on YO Unique, Life Starring You. We're here for you, and we are what we are because of you, so thank you so much for being with us. For those of you just joining us, we'd like to share with you a little project that we have here at Unique called Pray It Forward. And basically what it is that scientific studies have shown that meditation, positive thoughts, loving energy can actually change the dynamic of a situation. And so we just ask that with everything that's going on in the world today, if you see anything disconcerting on the, you know, in the media, rather than getting stressed out about it, we ask that you just offer up a little prayer or send some loving energy that, you know, that way, because we do believe it makes a difference. So thank you for that. We're just absolutely delighted to have with us a very special guest tonight by the name of Georgia Stitt. And Georgia is a force with which to be reckoned, especially in the Broadway world. She's a composer, lyricist, musical director, and record producer. Her original musicals include Big Red Sun, Hello My Baby, The Water, Sing Me a Happy Song, and Mosaic. In 2007, she released her first album, This Ordinary Thursday, the song of Georgia Stitt. Georgia's latest album, My Lifelong Love, will be released this winter. Actually, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about that tonight. And it features performances by Anika Noni Rose, Brian Darcy James, John Pizzarelli, and Jessica Mulaski, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Shoshana Bean, and others. In 2011, Georgia produced Susan Egan's album, The Secret of Happiness, and Robert Creighton's album, Ain't We Got Fun. Her non-theatrical compositions include several choral pieces with Hope and Virtue, including With Hope and Virtue, which was featured on NPR, and using text from President Obama's 2000 inauguration speech. She served as composer-in-residence for the Tribeca Performing Arts Center in New York and has performed her music throughout the United States, England, Scotland, Australia, Denmark, Germany, and Japan. Georgia, also a musical director, was the vocal coach for the 2008 season of the NBC hit show America's Got Talent. She was the assistant musical director for the NBC TV special Class of the Choirs and the on-camera vocal coach for the NBC reality TV show Grease, You're the One That I Want. She was also the production music coordinator for the Disney ABC TV musical Once Upon a Mattress, starring Tracy Ullman and Carol Burnett. On Broadway, she was the assistant conductor of Little Shop of Horrors and the associate conductor for Encore's production of Can Can, starring Patti LuPone. Also on Broadway, Avenue Q, Sweet Smell of Success, The Music Man, Titanic, Annie, and the National Tour of Parade. And in 2005, she served as an arranger for the Boston Pops Orchestra, Keith Lockhart conductor, in their 75th anniversary tribute to Stephen Sondheim at Tanglewood and Boston Symphony Hall. Georgia has music degrees from NYU and Vanderbilt. She currently resides in Los Angeles and sometimes New York with her husband, composer, lyricist Jason Robert Brown, and their two beautiful daughters. Please join me in welcoming Georgia Stitt. Welcome, Georgia.
Hi. Thank you, Susan. That's a very impressive bio.
You know, Georgia, it's funny because that is the edited version of, you know, and I was sitting here going, oh my gosh, we could do just the whole hour on your bio. And I'm thinking, I'm exhausted just, you know, listening to all of that. Where in the world, my dear, do you find the energy? I mean, really,
well,
you are just a creative force.
I didn't do all of those things this year. I mean, I've been at it for a very long time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, now, Georgia, share with us, because some of our listeners may just be meeting you for the first time this evening. Did you know from an early age, was performing just always, you know, in music or theater, was that in your blood? Or was there one specific sort of aha moment where you thought, oh, this is going to be my life?
Well, that's a great question. I think music has always been in my blood, and I think I always knew that I was going to be a musician of some sort. I asked my mother to give me piano lessons when I was 7 years old, and apparently I had a babysitter who had a piano in her house. And when I was there at her house, I would just sit at the piano and try to pick out melodies of things I know, and I came home and asked my mom for piano. So by the time I was 14, I was the church pianist at the church in my small town in Tennessee where I grew up, and I was an accompanist for the high school choir and things like that. So I knew that that was what I was really good at, better than anyone else in my town or my school. But the theater of it didn't come until later. I found my way to composition in a summer camp program. I went as a piano major to summer music camp. And while I was there, I had a professor who introduced me to music composition, and that really opened up. I didn't realize that there were people who were living that wrote music. I thought it was all Beethoven's and Bach's, and I didn't realize that you could do that. And then in college, I had a professor who, his summer job was that he conducted musicals at a summer stock theater in Massachusetts, and he asked me to come as his pianist for one summer. And that was really my entree into musical theater. It wasn't really until college that I made my way from classical music into musical theater. But then it all made sense. You know, I think we rehearsed 9 musicals in 11 weeks in that summer stock theater. We would be rehearsing one show during the day. This is what summer stock is. You know, when you're 19, 20, 21 years old, it seems like the greatest thing in the world. And you're living basically in a camp, like in a... you know, a campground kind of. We were in houses, but cabins, you know, and then you're rehearsing one show during the day and performing another show at night, and then you get up and have breakfast and go back to the first show, and then every week it rotates into the next. So over the course of 11 weeks, you do 9 different shows. It takes a couple, the first 2 shows, it takes a little bit longer to get into the routine because you can't just be shot out of a cannon like that. That was, I remember that summer when I must have been 19 or 20 years old, being definitive for me in like, okay, I like theater people, I like music people, I like writing poetry, I like writing music, I could set my own words and write musicals and live in this kind of environment, and that sounds good to me. So that was, I guess, when it really became clear what I was going to do.
Oh, wow. And Georgia, would you say that you come from a pretty supportive background in terms of your parents were supportive of you wanting to follow that path? Were they into musical theater as well?
They were not into musical theater, but they were very supportive. I think my mother was very much about finding the thing that you are good at and making sure that you have access to, you know, the resources and the support for the things that can make that possible. I mean, when I became clear that my piano teacher was the organist at the church for many years, and there came a point where I had outgrown her. I mean, I needed to work on harder repertoire than she was able to teach me. And so my mother moved me to a piano teacher at the university and put me in sort of a pre-college program. She recognized that was happening. And then my dad is a businessman, but he is also a photographer, a hobbyist, but with a really brilliant eye and a passion for photography. And I think he recognized a kindred artist in me and was very supportive of me as a musician, even though he didn't really know much about it. He certainly appreciated it, and he liked to listen to classical music in our house, so we shared that. But he very much encouraged me to go do it and be good at it if I was going to do it. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And George, it's kind of a common theme on this show, and we spoke about this a little bit before, about this idea of kids going into the performing arts or the entertainment field, whether that be musical theater or pop or whatever it is that they feel guided to do. And there's a lot of people who are, you know, there's this I don't want to say misconception, but there's this general idea that, oh my gosh, you know, it's just very unstable and you'll never make a living and that sort of thing. And what was interesting is last week we had Suze Megan on the show, and she made a point of nowadays we live in an ever-changing sort of context where you used to go to work for 40 years and get a gold watch and thank you so much, and it's not like that anymore. So what advice would you offer us, especially to today's young people, but really anyone of any age who just really feels like, wow, I'd really like to be involved and have this be my life, especially if they don't have that support network? What would you suggest?
I think when young people write me and ask for my advice about going into this, I tell them to make sure that they study. When you have the when you're young and you're in school and you have the network of, it's okay to like experiment in what you're studying, and you don't necessarily have to be out making a living every minute of every day. You can take a class because it sounds interesting to you. When you have that available to you, go study everything that you think might in any way be related to what you want to do. Not just the, you know, like for musical theater people, I say don't just study singing and dancing. Study everything. Study history. Study literature. Study art. Study geography. Study, you know, anything that you feel like might in some way be relative to what it is that you're doing. Because for me, I have my undergraduate degree is in music composition, and then I have a master's degree. I went to a program at NYU where they take playwrights and songwriters and throw them all in the same mix, and so your degree is in musical theater writing. So I was in school for a very long time and got a lot of degrees, and I still think that I learned more in the first 3 to 5 years I was out of school than I learned in all the school together. You know, somebody, you know, my first music directing job out of school was a high school was doing a production of Into the Woods, and they hired me to be the music director. I had never music directed anything except at this summer camp where I had worked, you know, but I had never music directed in anything in New York City. And I learned how to do it on that job with those students. And then the first time I played in a Broadway pit, you know, I learned how to do it by having to do it. The first time I conducted an orchestra, I learned how to do it by having to do it. And so to young people, I say, get the experience before the stakes are so high that there are serious consequences. You know, if you make a mistake in your college, you know, if you're conducting an orchestra in your college and you make a mistake, it's, you know, it's devastating in the moment, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the same as if you make that mistake on Broadway or, you know, in front of the Boston Pops or whatever it is.
Right, absolutely.
Get yourself the experience so that when the time comes when it matters, you can say, oh, yeah, I've done this before. I'm in my comfort zone as much as you ever can be.
Well, I love that. That's a really wise piece of advice, I think, for anyone, actually. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Georgia, one of the things that you do also is you've got this amazing collaboration with Susan Egan called Glamour and Goop, and you sort of share the ins and outs of the, you know, the performing world and what really goes on. Would love to direct our listeners to that and just have you share a little bit with us about how that came about.
Well, Susan and I were professional friends first. We were introduced by the man who's the head. His name is Michael Kirker. He's the head of musical theater at ASCAP, which is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. And Susan contacted him because she was recording a record and she wanted some new music by contemporary songwriters, and he directed her to me. And we were aware of each other in the world, but we sort of got to be friends through that professional introduction. And then because we're about the same age, and now we have children that are about the same age, we've really just gotten to be girlfriends, too. We have a lot in common. We see the world the same way. We're both very driven and, I guess, ambitious, but in the good way, you know, not the sort of crazy, blind ambition way. And I think we just really enjoy each other. And so we have often looked for things, ways that we can ways that we can work together. And I like to say about Susan that she and I kind of fill in the holes in each other's professional areas of expertise. she is, the things that I'm not so good at, she's so much better at, and vice versa. And so we have her album. She just made a new album, and I produced it. I wrote several of the songs on it, and I wrote almost all of the arrangements on it. And then I sat with her in the studio day in and day out and recorded it and mixed it and all of those things with her and with our amazing engineer, Andy Waterman, who helped do the actual physical recording of the album. And so she and I did that, and we write this blog together called Glamour and Goop, where we talk about specifically, because we are both prominent in the musical theater, I think oftentimes people look at our lives and think that they're very glamorous. They see us only on stage or in our headshots where we're all dolled up and, you know, in fancy right. gowns and with our arms around other celebrities and that sort of thing. And the practical life is that we both have small children at home and husbands who travel a lot, and so we're often overwhelmed with dishes and housework and laundry and trying to return your emails in a timely manner and just sort of the real life things that bog down everybody in today's modern world. And so Glamour and Goop is our attempt to make sense out of all that. That, you know, it may look very glamorous, but it's often work. And then the flip side of it, the thing that we're important, that we try to be very clear about, is it's not that work is glamour and house is goop, but sometimes the glamour is at home. Sometimes the goop is that show business is a very ugly business, and sometimes there are things that don't go your way professionally, and then your home life is where your joy comes from, you know, your children or your relationship or your dog or whatever it is. Sometimes the glamour is about the security of being home, too.
Right, and that's one of the things that I love that comes through, and especially what you share about motherhood, and we're going to come back to talking about that a little bit later in the show. And Georgia, something that sort of just really kind of comes through with the body of work that you've done and your personality, and would love to have you share a little bit about this, and then we're going to talk about the album. For anyone who may just be joining us, we're here with Georgia Stitch. Please visit Georgia's website at www.georgiastitch, and that's STITC.com. Georgia, I happened to see an interview recently that Bradley Cooper had done on Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton, mm-hmm. and he was talking about his passion for performance, and he said that literally now picking up a cup in a scene to him is the same as it was when it was, you know, when he was in college, like sort of before he was making the big bucks, and he was talking about sort of navigating some of the issues with celebrity and that sort of thing, but really just wanting to learn and grow as a performer and you know, intending to sort of maintain that passion for performance. Could you talk a little bit to us about if that's something that has change when you sort of went from being in college and sort of exploring and doing that sort of thing to doing it on a professional level, and how you maintain your passion for it, especially when now all of a sudden as a producer and a composer and that sort of thing, you know, I would imagine that there are certain expectations that are placed on you to, you know, to quote-unquote produce. Share with us a little bit about how you sort of maintain that and still, you know, really create work that is true to your heart and true to you as an artist.
That's a really great question. Thank you for asking that. And a deep question. You can go very deep into this conversation, I think. The answer for me is that, or at the beginning of the answer for me, I guess, is that I don't think I'm as prolific as I would like to be. I write on deadline most of the time. Most effectively, I write on deadline if somebody's waiting for something, be it a singer or a writing partner or a producer or director or somebody. You know, the having somebody say, "I need this on Tuesday" is just the most valuable thing, because the truth for me is that there are 150 other things that I would rather be doing, or that need to be done. You know, even if they're things like email or dishes or, you know, just sort of the grunt work of life, I sometimes find that the day just disappears and I haven't made time to write. But having the deadline for me is is really great. And so then when you're working on a deadline, the thing that I had in college that I don't have anymore is the is time. You know, is this in college I would ride my bicycle over to the practice room in the music building and lock the door and just sit there and wait to see what comes out, you know, like, what do I feel like saying today? And I can't remember the last time I had that luxury. It's really like, okay, I have an hour and a half to go into my studio, and then I have to go pick up my daughter at school, and then I have the, you know, after they go to bed, I have 2 to 3 hours, but I'm probably going to be exhausted. I'm going to lose my ability to focus at a certain point. And so it's all very much about I'm sort of reshaping the question that you asked, but for me it's about how do you figure out how to say something worth saying when you just have these short chunks of time in which to do it. And the answer to that is I don't think I produce as much new material as maybe some of my colleagues do, or who knows. But I try to make sure that when I do release something into the world, it says something that is distinctly me, that it has my point of view behind it, whether that's in the lyrics or in the music or even in the arrangement, that there's something about it that feels like it comes from the way I see the world right now. And so that, also with songs, with lyrics especially, I try to find ways into song moments that I think, oh, I haven't ever heard that before. I haven't heard anybody say it quite like that before. Because so many songs are about love or loss or regret or, you know, and it's really easy to fall into cliches. And so I think I get passionate about something when I have found a new way into expressing a timeless idea, something that I think people will relate to because it's universal, but is maybe said in just a different way, whether that's lyrically or musically. And so when that happens, I get really excited, and then I guess that is the equivalent of what Bradley Cooper was talking about with his passion. You know, I get really excited about finding a new way to say something timeless.
And I think that, I think in some ways that that's something that all writers, whether it be music, literature, film, that sort of thing, is that, you know, in the midst of that, finding your own unique voice and really expressing it in a way that's authentic to yourself. And I think that's something that comes through in your music and especially on the album that you just did with Susan. Just, you know, really kind of, you know, saying things that, you know, maybe people aren't saying as much or saying it in a unique and creative way. So, you know, kudos to you for sort of, you know, staying true to yourself and working to get to that place of being authentic, because I think that that's the music that ultimately really touches people.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you.
For anyone just joining us, we are here with the lovely and talented Georgia Stitt. Please visit Georgia's website at www.georgiastitt.com. She's releasing a new album tonight at midnight, and you can get information on how to buy it there. And Georgia, would love to have you tell us a little bit about this new album and, you know, how it came to be and to share with us, you know, the process of what it's been like for you to create this.
Thanks. Well, the album is called My Lifelong Love. My Lifelong Love is a song that I wrote several years ago, and Lauren Kennedy recorded it on her album. It has become the most popular of my songs. It's the one with the most downloads and the most people asking for the sheet music and that sort of thing. So I guess it's my hit, my music theater cabaret hit. And I wanted to put it on one of my own records, you know, because it's on Lauren's record, and I love Lauren's version. And so at first I thought, well, I'll just put Lauren's version on my record. But then I thought, well, that's not fair to people who bought Lauren's record. So what can I do to reconceive it? And this was several years ago. I was asked to do a concert here in Los Angeles, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson wanted to sing it. He's Mitchell, sorry, on Modern Family, half of the Cam and Mitchell couple. He's the redhead. And he's also a musical theater expert, is not exactly the word that I mean, but he's done a lot of Broadway shows, and he's a musical theater guy. So So that was great. And to hear him reconceive that song made me understand it in a different way, and I thought it was important to have his version out in the world. The truth about this record is that since my first album came out in 2007, that album is called This Ordinary Thursday, and it's 12 songs that I wrote, and each song is a different Broadway singer on the track. And there's some pretty fantastic singers on that album. And as soon as that album came out, I started thinking about the next album. And I've been recording things, making demos, and trying to figure out where songs go and what their purpose is in the world. You know, these songs that don't belong in musicals, they aren't in shows. They're just these little one-off songs that I either wrote for me, or I wrote for a benefit, or I wrote for a concert, or I wrote for somebody's, you know, somebody's one-man show or something like that. What do you do with them? And so part of what I wanted to do with this album was get all of these songs out into the world, find the right match of singer and song, so that I felt like the song spoke to the singer and the singer spoke to the song, and together they lifted it into something very special. But I also didn't want the album to just be a collection of like, and here are a bunch of songs that I wrote. I wanted it to have a point of view. And so My Lifelong Love was kind of my way in, because I think you're going to play that song in a few minutes. But the idea of the song is that when I was young, I thought my lifelong love was one thing, but it turned out to be something else, and that has fueled me for the rest of my life. And I thought that's really what this everything on the album is about finding your true voice or your true passion or the essence of who you are. That's what I think this album adds up to. And I think that's where I am in my life right now. You know, I'm not as young as I used to be. I'm not old yet. I'm right smack in the middle. And so it's sort of this wisdom that comes with, I reluctantly say middle age, but, you know, having young kids, and I've been with my husband for 10 years, and there's something that comes out of the longevity of it all, and being able to look back and still look forward, that I feel like is where this album comes from.
Oh, I love that sentiment of being able to look back and being able to look forward. I think that's beautifully expressed, and especially what you were saying, too, about this idea of the wisdom that comes. I found especially with women, it seems to be a theme that, you know, it's like that they think they have this idea of who they are in their 20s, and then you talk to them when they get into, like, their 30s and their 40s, and they're like, oh, I have no idea who I was, and really this idea of fully kind of coming into womanhood and motherhood, and what does that mean, and you know, the lessons that come with all of that, and the change in perspective in life, and that's one of the things that I think that you do such a great job of sharing so eloquently, both in your music and you know, in the writing on the blog and that sort of thing. So thank you for giving a voice to that. We're going to listen to a clip from My Lifelong Love. Is there anything that you'd like us to know before we play the song, Georgia?
No, I think what I said and what you said are pretty much what the song is about, so you can jump right into it.
Okay, great. For anyone just joining us, we are here with the wonderful Georgia Stitt, www.georgiastitt, and that's STITT.com, and we're going to listen to the debut song from her album, My Lifelong Love, which is going to be available starting at midnight, and you can find it on her website.
He wasn't much to look at. I wouldn't call him fun. He was 12 years old and I was just 11. My friends thought I was crazy, but my innocence was won by the boy who introduced my heart to heaven. He was the smartest boy in the whole sixth grade, and I couldn't believe I'd found him. Though his teeth were in braces and his doctors were frayed, I just wanted to be around him. There are men who make you lose yourself or fill you with regret, but Adam won my lifelong love. because he played the clarinet. Doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo. I wanted nothing more than to share a stand with this prodigy of perfection. I dreamt of after-school practice with the junior high band, where we'd sit in the woodwind section. So I marched into the band room and became a Dave.
And now back to the show with your host, Susan Stackpole.
Thanks so much for joining us, listeners, here on Unique, Y-O-U, Unique Life Story. You. We are here with the absolutely delightful and very talented Georgia Stitt of his beautiful song, My Lifelong Love, you just heard, which is also the title track on her album that is newly released. Please visit her website for more information at www.georgiastitt.com, and that's GEORGIASTITT.com. Thank you so much for being here and sharing such beautiful music with us tonight, Georgia.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Yes. Georgia, one of the things that obviously is the biggest thing that you can do in this lifetime is, you know, having children. And from, you know, a professional and a personal standpoint, obviously, both those things are life-changing, especially balancing that in the context of motherhood and everything that comes with that that nobody really can adequately sort of warn you about and sort of finding your way in that. And as we touched on earlier, you write so elegantly about in Glamour and Goop, the blog that you do with Susan Egan. And you have another song on the album that you know, deals with children called Tights and Children. And was wondering if you would share with us a little bit about the inspiration for that song.
Kites and Children is a really specific project. There's a singer in Australia named Tyron Park, and his brother, Trent Park, is a photographer, one of the major photographers in Australia. And so Tyron, the singer, approached me and said he was collecting contemporary songwriters and asking if they would choose a photo of his brother's and write a song based on the image. And when the project was all said and done, he was going to do a concert of those songs and project his brother's images on the wall, and then he was going to release an album. And so Kites and Children is my contribution to that project, which is still in the works. His album is coming out. He's still working on it. He's done a lot of the recording, and he's still working on it. But I can't wait to see his project with a collection of all the other songwriters and their poems. I only know my one little piece in it. But the photo is a black and white photo of a stormy day, and there are a lot of children flying kites, but the clouds are dark, and it looks like a storm is probably coming. And so there's one girl at the forefront, and you see her, and she's looking up at the kite, and just behind her, on the edge of the frame, you can see a grown-up hand standing behind her, and then the body of the grown-up is cut out of the picture. So there's this sort of phantom, not phantom, there's obviously a person standing behind her, but you don't know who that is. And that's the person singing in my song, is the person standing behind the child. And I thought the image was so captivating. And I thought the story was so interesting. And, of course, I'm sure what I see in that photo is not necessarily what the photographer saw or certainly what any of the people in the picture were feeling on that day. But that's where the song came from. And then I asked Anika Noni Rose if she would record it, and she did. She has so many credits. She's currently on The Good Wife, and she was in The Princess and the Frog. She was the voice of Tiana, and she was in Carolina Change. I mean, she's just an amazing performer. But she said yes. So what you're about to hear is her singing that song. And I wrote the music and lyrics.
Oh, my goodness. What a beautiful story behind the song. And it adds a completely new dimension when you hear the song and thinking of that photograph. So thank you for sharing the inspiration with us, Georgia. That's lovely, very lovely. For anyone just joining us, we are here with Georgia Stitt. We're about to listen to Kites and Children off of her new album, My Lifelong Love.
stand behind you, not too close, not too far away. I feel the wind, it whispers things I dare not say. We know the truth about how hard it is to make things fly. The kite and I. You're carried forward, first a step, then a gentle run. You don't look back, and once the distance has begun, I turn my head, and just like that, you're nearly out of view. The kite and you. They tell me there's a storm coming. They tell me that I'm holding on tight to these strings.
Now back to the program with your host, Susan Stackpole.
Thank you so much, listeners, for joining us here on Unique, Y-O Unique, Life Starring You. We are here with the beautiful Georgia Spitz, whose song, Kites and Children, you just heard off of her new album, My Lifelong Love. Please visit her website at www.georgiastitt.com. Thank you so much for being here tonight, Georgia. You just are absolute gem.
Oh, gosh, thanks.
Yes. Georgia, one of the things that I think has sort of changed the landscape of music and creativity and all that sort of thing is the social media and having new opportunities to promote yourself and that sort of thing. But it's also sort of added, there's a lot of people now sort of making music at home studios and that sort of thing that weren't before. And so, it makes having a fan base, I think, today even more significant because there's sort of so much more of the market share up for grabs, whereas before it was sort of a more streamlined, sort of controlled a disbursement of, music and literature and that sort of thing. And so I was wondering if you could share with our listening audience, just so that they have an appreciation of it. When you create an album, obviously there's a lot that goes into it in terms of from a creative standpoint and writing and getting it to be what you want. And then, of course, unlike, say, someone who just has a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 job, they go to work, they punch the clock, they come home. Part of what helps you sort of pay for the album is people going out there and buying it. And so I was wondering if you could just share with us a little bit about, why your fan base is significant and in modern terms, how you connect with your fan base.
That's a great question. How do you connect with your fan base? I think that's what all artists are trying to figure out. And the more I travel, the more I realize how extensive the fan base is. I'm not by any means famous. I'm not, I have my little niche in the musical theater industry, and I have people who are paying attention to what I do, and I'm very grateful for them. But I think it's important to build community, not just in terms of fans, but in all aspects of your life, to build community and find people that are like you, and people who are interested in things you are, and people who are diverse and bring variety to your groups as well. But social media for me is, I'm very active on Facebook and I'm very active on Twitter. I have a YouTube page, I have a blog, I have all of those things. And I think the interaction with the people who are paying attention to what I'm doing is fantastic. It's great for me with the things that I've already put out in the world to get feedback on what they like and what they, it's rare. People don't really write like, hey, I hated that. They don't write negative things, but it becomes clear when everybody's talking about choice A and nobody's talking about choice B that you're like, huh, I guess choice B is not as relevant as I thought maybe it was. And you start to understand your work and what's vital. And then I really, really love the responses, want to get responses from people, and they tell me specific instances on how something that I wrote impacted their life. You know, that is a kind of feedback that I don't think you get or that you got before the sort of direct social media contact that we have. You know, when I was a little girl, I remember I wrote a fan letter. I'm not even going to tell you who I wrote it to because I'm embarrassed. But I wrote a fan letter and I sent it off into the world, and that was the end of that. And now, if someone wrote a similar letter to me and posted it on my Facebook page, I would probably acknowledge it. I would either write and say thanks for writing, or I would actually write back with something. Or, you know, you can write me an email at my website, and it will show up in my inbox right next to the thing from my agent and the thing from my husband and the thing from my mom. You know, it's right there. So right. Your access to the people that you admire is so much more tangible than it used to be. And so I think the responsibility for those of us who are getting questions, especially from people who are interested, is so important. It's so important for us to keep the conversation two-sided. And so on Facebook and on Twitter, especially on Twitter, I often put things out in the world that are interesting to me, that I think will be interesting to the kinds of people who follow me. The kinds of people who are interested in me might also be interested in this interesting musical thing, or this interesting theatrical thing, or this interesting motherhood thing, or, you know, extensions of my circle to other people's circles. And then I'm interested in their, I mean, that's exactly what networking is. And then I'm interested in reading what they do. And ultimately, I think that's how we connect in the modern world, beyond the people that you encounter in your day-to-day life, you know, the people that you physically run into, or that you make the effort to call on the phone, or that you, you know, have dinner with. So for me, it's really about building community and staying present. I think I got really active in social media. I lived in New York City for 10 years, and then a few years ago, I moved to California, and I think I had a fear that being away from New York was going to make people forget about me and what I was trying to do professionally. And so that was around the same time that Facebook started becoming important to people. And so I got active on Facebook and made sure I stayed connected with the people that were important to me so that they wouldn't forget. But then I think that's where it started. And it turned into something so much more for me. It turned into... Like I was saying, building community.
And you know, one thing I will say, Georgia, is you're so gracious in terms of connecting with your fans and things like that, because, you know, there are people in a similar position that, you know, it's just they're so busy or whatever it is that it's not a priority. And so that's something that I definitely commend you for, is just really taking time and sort of taking that, I don't want to say responsibility, but really sort of honoring your position and saying, you know, hey, if I have somebody reaching out and you know, I can offer up a kind word or feedback or whatever, because you are extremely busy with every other aspect of your life. So I really do commend you for really sort of finding a way to, you know, bring it all together and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, do the best that I can today and, you know, just get up and make that effort every day. So I really commend you for that.
Making the best effort. I mean, as you were saying that, I was like, oh, I can think of like 10 or 15 emails unanswered in my email box right now from people who, if they were listening, they'd be like, she's lying, she never wrote me back. You know, I mean, we're all guilty of it, but the thing that you said that does resonate with me is that I do feel the responsibility. I do feel, especially with young composers and especially with young female composers, I just feel like if they are looking up to me in some way, then I should give them some direction as best I can. You know, I just think it's, I do think it's so important. But the other important thing is that I have to not get sucked into doing that all day, every day, or I'll stop writing myself. You know, so it's just about finding balance. And I think balance is the key word for me in my life. And, you know, everything is about balance. Family and work is about balance, and music and lyrics is about balance, and performing and writing is about balance. They're just a It's all about figuring out where you live on that fulcrum so that you stay in balance all the time.
And I think that that's I think that, that for all of us, I think that everybody just sort of, you know, we do the best that we can and sort of, you know, there is no rule book that says, okay, this is the way to structure your day or structure your time or structure your energy. And so, like I said, and I love that you sort of, you know, incorporate that into what you're writing and, you know, what you share on your blog as well. So, you know, thank you for being so authentic and so candid, because I think especially as a woman, that's particularly inspiring. I think women tend to put a lot of pressure on themselves to be superwomen. So, you know, having women out there, I think the more that are saying, no, this is what's real and this is how it really is, sort of gives everyone permission to be themselves. So I really commend you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's key. And you just keep saying being authentic and forgiving yourself. I just think, you know, not just women, but especially women need to keep reminding themselves that. I'm saying it out loud and reminding myself to forgive myself for the things that I haven't done right or haven't done at all. You know, that it is constantly about, at the end of the day, tallying up what you did manage to accomplish and what you, instead of saying you failed at, what you have to roll over to the next day and keep attempting to accomplish.
Right. Every day is a new day and a new opportunity, and you learned lessons today that give you tools to go into tomorrow that you didn't have today. So, you know, ultimately it's about learning and growing, and I love that you're such an, you know, such a passionate sort of student of life that really, really comes through and is quite inspiring. Sort of, we have just a few more moments in the show here. For anyone just joining us, we're here with Georgia Stitt, GeorgiaStitt.com. And Georgia, we're going to close out the show with your beautiful sonnet, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. Is there anything upcoming that you'd like people to know about, or anything in particular you'd like them to check out with the new album?
Well, yeah, definitely check out the album. That comes out tomorrow, and I'd love it. It'll be on iTunes tomorrow, and it's available. The label is Shikaboom. It's SH-K-Boom, shikaboom.com. Or you can get there through my website. There are several clips that you can listen to. You can hear the snippets on iTunes. Shikaboom has hard copy ready to mail. I don't think Amazon is going to have it ready to mail for a few more weeks because the holiday, they've gotten backlogged a little bit more, but there's that. I have a couple musicals. I just closed a show at Goodspeed, which is a regional theater in Connecticut, a show I wrote called Hello, My Baby with Sherry Steinkellner. And we're doing that again in the spring out on the West Coast. We're doing it at the Rubicon Theater in Ventura in March, April, and May, in the Ventura, California, and Santa Barbara, California area. And we're hoping for, when a show has a lot of future ahead of it, we say that it has legs. So we're hoping that it has legs and it runs away from us and turns into something big. And then Susan Egan and I are performing in the spring in New York City at Birdland. We have a date reserved for that at the end of April. So, yeah, again, if you become a part of the community on Twitter or Facebook or something like that, I'll be sure to let you know.
Excellent, excellent. And we're going to talk about Sonnet in just a second. We like to sort of close out the show with any sort of words of wisdom or maybe a personal mantra or something that has been particularly inspiring for you, Georgia.
You know, just as you were talking just now, my husband, when I married my husband, I still tend to get stressed out, but maybe it was more so then. He has a mantra that he just repeats, everything gets done. And so, you know, it might mean that you stay up all night the night before, or it might be, you know, that it costs you more money than you expected it to do. But everything does get done. If it's important to you, it gets done. And so sometimes when I'm just really freaked out about getting through my to-do list, I hear his voice in my head saying, everything gets done, relax, you know. And I think it's, again, it goes with that forgiving yourself thing. I'm sure that I have other mantras, but that's the one that's in my head right now.
No, I love that. I think that's so important nowadays because, you know, everybody does, oh my gosh. And with social media and all that, it's like there's always something. There's always an email. There's always something. So that's beautiful. Georgia, tell us just a little bit about Sonnet 29.
Sonnet 29 is by Shakespeare, and it's, I think, one of his more famous sonnets. If you are a student of the Shakespeare sonnets, the minute it starts, you will recognize it. And I am a part of a collective in New York City called the New Voices Collective. My friend Joel Fram is the artistic director, and he commissions writers who are music directors, and says, will you write on this theme? And then he puts together this fabulously classy acoustic concert in New York. Actually, there is one coming up on December 12th in New York at Symphony Space, and I'll be premiering a piece there too, something that's not on the record. But he asked me to set a poem. I think he actually asked me to set this poem, and I set it to music, and it has taken on a life of its own because many people have asked to perform it. Dan Reichert recorded it, the demo, the first time, and then Titus Burgess sang it in a concert of mine, and then some British performers have recorded it. Damien Humley has recorded it, and just most recently, Brian Darcy James recorded it with, and I had Don Sobeski orchestrate it for a full orchestra. And so that once I recorded this song, I thought, well, now I know what this album is. And this is, it's such a great, it's beautiful sentiment. It's very much about forgiving yourself and learning to love yourself.
Oh, excellent. Such a lovely way to sort of encapsulate a lot of what we've been talking about here tonight. For anyone who just tuned in, we're just winding up here with a Georgia Stitt, www.georgiastitt, and that's STITT.com, and she's debuting her album, My Lifelong Love. Please check her website for more information, and this beautiful song that you're about to hear, Sonnet number 29, can also be found on the album. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight, Georgia. You just are just absolutely a sweetheart and just bring so much energy and information and just wisdom with you, and we're just so grateful. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Unique YOU, Unique Life Starring You.
When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy. Contentedly. Yet in these thoughts, myself almost despising, happily.